Good afternoon. It is 3:17, calling the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order for Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017, room 124 of the Capitol Building. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. Members present, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Stutes, Representative Birch, Representative Josephson, Vice Chair Wool, and myself, Chair Quito. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Representative Knopp is excused for today. Our support staff today are, of course, Recording Secretary Caitlin Ellis to my right, LIO Moderator Tom Raymond to my left, and staff Bianca Carpinetti to my left and a little behind us. And today we have no action items, but we do have a presentation. And presentation is on the issue that we had discussed during the budget subcommittee process, one of the issues that the finance chair of the Department of Commerce budget suggested that we look into a little further and consider whether or not there are opportunities for modifying or changing this particular expenditure reduction. So we do have Brittany Sione Hayward, Director of Division of Economic Development, here with us today, and we have a presentation on the beer and malt beverage tax, and we will go ahead and get started with that and begin our discussion. So Ms. Sione Hayward, please introduce yourself for the record and provide us with your presentation.
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Brittany Choney Haywood. I'm the director for the Division of Economic Development in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. So today I'm going to be presenting an overview of Alaska's brewing industry. As it currently stands, I have some national numbers and then also some general information within the state. So the brewing industry in Alaska brews, packages, and sells beer across the state, the nation, and the world. I will note that I'm only looking at the brewery industry and not distilleries in this presentation. The industry is considered a basic economic sector, meaning it provides products to outside of Alaska and brings money into the Alaska economy, and that is versus a non-basic sector where money is recirculated within an economy. The industry is also considered a secondary sector, meaning that's a manufacturing sector where it's transforming raw materials into a finished product. These are national numbers. It comes from the National Brewers Association, and as you can see, the overall market for beer is flat. However, the craft market has seen an increase, as well as import beer. And export as well have all been increasing in the production or in the sales numbers. So this is sales numbers. The next slide will look at production numbers.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Sorry, I'm not familiar with the terminologies here, but what is BBLS when that's referred to?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, that would be barrels. I'm sorry, I didn't realize it was on this one. I have it defined later in a different slide.
Okay.
Let me.
Barrels.
It's barrels. Yeah,
got it.
So, and one barrel is 31 gallons.
Okay.
If that's helpful.
Representative Birch also has a question.
Sure.
Just a question. I have an acquaintance who has started it's not a distillery, but it's a apple cider. It's a hard cider. Does that fall into this realm, or is that something different in between? I mean, I know you got wine and hard liquor and beer, but I didn't know does this include the hard ciders and stuff?
Through the chair, Representative Birch, I think that it does not. I think this is only focused on beer. There was a note on there that said it didn't include malt beverages.
Okay.
I'm not sure that cider actually falls within that category, but I think that it's only U.S. beer sales.
Okay. Sure. Thanks.
And Representative Wool.
Two questions. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. A keg of beer is called a half barrel, which is 15.5 gallons. So when you say barrels, you mean barrels and not kegs? You mean a full 31 gallons?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, a barrel is considered 31 gallons.
And I think on Representative Birch's question, it was my understanding that cider does fall into the same barrel taxing that, according to the beer distributors that I spoke with the other day. But
okay.
I'm not a tax expert.
Through the chair, I would need to probably go back and look at this Brewers Association where I pulled the infographic from and see if they have more information on that. These are production numbers. So the previous slide was sale numbers. This is production number. Again, the overall market is flat. However, craft beverages have seen an increase. The vast majority of that increase has been within regional breweries. A regional brewery is a production between 15,000 and 6 million barrels per year. You want that again, mm-hmm. Chairman? So a regional brewery is a production that falls between 15,000 and 6 million barrels per year.
Thank you. Representative Birch.
I can't quite read the top right, each one of those, like the big blue slice.
Microbreweries.
That's a, okay.
It's contract brewing companies, microbreweries.
That's 1%?
Yes,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Brew pubs, and regional craft breweries.
Okay. So on the bottom graphic, that large kind of bluish green chunk on the top is the regional breweries that I just referenced.
Okay.
The next kind of below that, where it's a slightly darker blue, is the microbreweries. Again, these are from the National Brewers Association, and I was just trying to give a kind of a picture of the overall national market and where it's headed.
And just through the chairman, so the Alaska brewery, I mean our local hometown brewery, would that be in the blue then?
The Alaskan Brewery in Juneau would be a regional, considered a regional brewery because they fall within that definition. They do produce more than 15,000 barrels a year. Most of the rest of the breweries in Alaska are going to be microbreweries, which is that next chunk that has seen an increase.
Thank you.
For the record, microbrewery is production under 15,000 barrels. Again, this is from the Brewers Association, so this is the numbers that they have for Alaska. I also have some numbers that go to 2015. These are 2014 numbers that are from an in-state source. Some of the economic modeling that I've been told the Brewers Association does on a national level can get a little wonky when it comes to Alaska because we don't have a lot of the economic data that they typically use. But so this is an estimate from an outside source, however, the Brewers Association at a national level, and they do this by state. And so this is what they were saying existed in 2014. So as a state, we rank 43rd as far as economic impact at $239 million. But if you take that to a per capita, because we have a small population, we are actually ranked fifth.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, through the chair. This is 2014, 27 craft breweries. But we're 2017 now. You must have more updated numbers. That's a pretty low number, isn't it?
I do. And through the chair, Representative Wall, I do have some more current numbers. I believe they go through 2015. So I also did speak to the Guild, and currently we're at 39 breweries. So it has gone up slightly. So not all of those are in production, however. I believe that 30 are in production and approximately 9 are in kind of the planning stage.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
So industry size, the sale of craft beer has more than tripled in Alaska during the past 10 years. We've gone from about 1 million to 3.6 million approximately, and sales of locally produced craft beer has increased more than fourfold during that same time period. So here we are with the numbers that, and I did speak to the Guild yesterday, so these are current numbers. 39 breweries, all but one, as I stated earlier, are a microbrewery, so they produce fewer than 15,000 barrels per year. Nine of them are brew pubs, so that would be a restaurant-brewery combination selling 25% or more of their beer on site, and then the one regional brewery with production at approximately 160,000 barrels a year. So this is the beverage manufacturing employment. These numbers come from the Alaska Department of Labor. I do want to caution in that we have seen an increase. I would believe that most of this is probably coming from craft beverage, but this is beverage manufacturing, which means it's going to include any distilleries and possibly if there's any soda production in here as well. And so I just want to clarify that this is a higher level kind of overview of the manufacturing employment. We tried to see if we could drill down, but there wasn't a way to get any finer detail on this. The employment in this sector has grown every year since 2006. Average monthly employment in the sector was 419 jobs, and then average wages are around $2,700 per person per month. So according to the U.S. Department of Treasury, as of the first quarter of 2017, they listed 40 breweries. So there's a little kind of discrepancy in numbers. I don't know if one of them has not come to fruition. Again, these are federal numbers, and I will always caution on economic data. It gets a little difficult sometimes to estimate that, given how the federal government usually pulls data from tax information, and we don't have that necessarily. But from what we can gather, there's been about a 50% increase in breweries from 2011 to 2015, 66% growth in employment, 72% growth in wages, 33% growth in production, and a 27% growth in taxes collected on beer qualifying for the reduced tax rate. So this is kind of the economic impact. This comes from the Brewers Guild of Alaska. They do a study, an economic impact study, every couple of years. And so this was the last one that was available. It was published in February of 2016, I believe. It gives the direct, indirect, and induced impacts. So to kind of define those, direct spending would be spending done by a brewery on things like payroll, fees, taxes, rent, and owner's income. Indirect spending is when they go out into the community. It's spending that is earned from in-state brewing activities. So if they went to Costco or they purchased a raw input from maybe a farmer or another business, then that would go into the indirect impacts. And then induced impacts are when employees go and spend their paycheck within the community. So if we look at that, then we see as far as full-time equivalent jobs for the industry, we're at just under 2,300. Business income, $492 million. When we're looking at payroll or owner's income, we're at about $96 million. Taxes and fees, $35 million. And then rents and dividends paid out at $37 million. So approximately total economic impact by this sector is about $169 million. The estimated percent retained within Alaska then is approximately 34%.
So when you have, I guess this is Brewers Guild information, but it identifies fees and taxes, and so I know we have the tax issue is the thing that we're discussing, and we'll get more information about that in a minute. Do you have any idea of what the fees paid would be, or is that going to be Department of Revenue as well?
Chairman, I am not entirely sure on that. I would need to go back. I can. I do have the study with me, and I can reference and see if it details that out. Let's see here real quick. I don't see it offhand, but...
Okay. Go ahead and continue.
So one of the things with this industry as it's emerging is it is becoming more of a tourist attraction. These are two fairly recent articles that have come out on online sources that I was able to pull. And I think it's becoming more of, if you look at the Bourbon Trail in Kentucky, I believe Colorado has something new that they've implemented within theirs, but kind of more of a tourist attraction. And so I wanted to note that the Alaska brand is strong through other marketing outlets, such as ASME and Alaska Tourism, and that this is just another option where we can play off onto that strong branding and appeal to audiences outside the U.S. Again, anytime that we have money coming into the economy from outside, it's a basic industry, and it allows the economy to grow. And so we always like to see those tourists come up and drink Alaska beer or whatever they're going to do when they visit. I also wanted to touch on export potential. And this industry manufactures value-added products that offer an opportunity for export both to national and international markets. And this is something that the Division of Economic Development has looked into in conjunction with the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. We did produce last year an export opportunities for Alaska distilleries and breweries. It was basically looking, it's a very nuts and bolts detailed report on market sectors, what it takes to get into these markets. We looked at four of them, Canada, China, Germany, and South Korea. A number of export markets were analyzed, and then these four were chosen based on a scoring of what we thought might be really potential markets for Alaska products. I pulled out just a few bullet points that were referenced in conjunction with the Alaska beer for this presentation. Again, this one also included distilleries. But Canada, China, and South Korea scored the highest for the export markets for Alaska beer. Again, this is based on kind of consumer trends within those countries. We also took into account the trading pacts such as NAFTA and what tariffs might be on those products. Millennials are an important consumption group in each of these countries that were considered, and they are one of the things that's driving the market growth for craft beer and liquor in the U.S. as well. So this report really was to provide these small but fast-growing producers with information for each one of these countries that then could be used. The U.S. Commercial Service, about a year or so ago, just reopened its office in Alaska, and they are focused on exports and working and getting Alaska products exported. It's a federal agency, and they're in Anchorage. And I know that we've had conversations with them as well on these products and getting them out. There's a number of distilleries that are kind of just reaching the point where they're starting to consider exporting either nationally or to international markets as well. And then in conclusion, I just want to say that this industry is emerging. It's mainly made up of small and startup firms, and one of the important things I think on it is that export potential. So that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to entertain any other questions if there are any. I know that Tax is going to present on the tax component of this.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And seeing as TAC will present on tax, I won't ask you taxing questions. But It's a
taxi question.
Taxi question. That's later.
Oh. I don't know anything on that one either.
I'm not going there. So Alaska beer distributed around the state, nation, and the world. Besides Alaskan brewing, who else goes outside of the state?
I would need to check with the guild on that to see. I'm through the chair, Representative. I'm not entirely sure on that, but I'd be happy to follow up and get that information for you.
My knowledge, I think that's the only one, and I don't know if they go outside of the U.S. and into the world. I don't think so. I don't think so.
My guess might be Canada.
Sure, we can find out. Follow up. So the tax exemption law, I guess that's a tax question. The tasting room law, do you know anything about that? Self-sampling?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, I know a little bit about that. So.
Okay.
I do have an industry.
It's a really big part of the brewing industry, and correct. That probably is why there was a blossoming of small breweries in 2006, because that's when that law went into play, and so that someone could make beer on a premise. And instead of exporting it in keg form to neighboring beverage license places, they could sell it on premise for to really max. They can be a manufacturer, distributor, and a retailer all in the same shop. And that's, I believe, what is the main impetus for the growth to 40 breweries or however many are coming. So, and that's related to tax questions as well. So I guess that's all.
I will, through the chair, Representative Wool, I will say that I agree that I think that probably has been an important piece in growing this sector. You know, this industry has been growing for many, many years in other parts of the country. I moved here from Colorado in 2006, and it was considered the Napa Valley of beer at that time. I don't know if they still retain that title. I think it's a self-given title. But you know, they've kind of fostered that. I think that we're also seeing that. I would agree with that comment, and that I think we're seeing that with the distilleries now as well. That was recently changed to allow distilleries to have those tasting rooms as well, and we've seen a number of distilleries coming on now.
And last follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as the economic impact goes, you have the number of, I guess, breweries and barrels sold. Do you have the overall number sold from beers not made in Alaska? In other words, is the consumption going up, or is it just being shifted from, say, you know, Sierra Nevada and Full Sail and Red Hook type beers, or what's the one from Colorado? Fat Tire or something like that.
New Belgium.
New Belgium, thank you. Are they shifting, you know, is it just moving around, or is it, there's a growing market?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, I know that the craft market has been growing, and that we've seen a shift from kind of those domestics to the craft market as consumers have, I think, become a bit more educated about beer and wanting to experiment with different types as well. I would have to go and research the actual consumption numbers and whether or not we are seeing that shift or if there's an increase in overall consumption, however.
Okay. Thank you.
Right, any other questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next up, we do have Ken Alper, who is the director of the Division of Tax for the Department of Revenue. Mr. Alper, if you can come forward, provide your name and affiliation for the record, and give us your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ken Alper. I'm the director of the Tax Division at the Department of Revenue. And if you don't mind, I'm not familiar with this machine. If you could take a brief at ease, we can get my presentation spun out.
Certainly. Brief at ease. Thank you. We're back on the record, 3:43 p.m., and Mr. Alper, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for having us here, and sorry for the delay. So the context in which we were asked to come before the committee is to look at the reduced tax rate for small craft breweries and how it's applied and what some of the underlying numbers are. That is a provision that came out as part of the indirect expenditure report. And I'll blow through this fairly quickly at your discretion and just talking about how that report developed and what came out from it. This was a bill that passed in 2014, sponsored by Representative Thompson, requires a report every 2 years from revenue to the legislature with the detail of everything that's called an indirect expenditure. And then legislative finance comes up with a more detailed report by department on a rotating schedule. There have been two of these reports that have been issued to the legislature, the first in 2014, the second in 2016. So the way an indirect expenditure is defined in law is it's an explicit or express provision of law that results in foregone revenue. So it's less taxes in some way, a tax credit, some other credit, an exemption from having to pay tax, some sort of discount or deduction, not including, obviously, a deduction in the ordinary course of business if you are paying something on profits, for example. Those aren't discounts. Those are just an allowable deduction. So those sorts of things are itemized. Our report showed detail on 231 different line items, different expenditures that are offered by different agencies throughout the state of Alaska, of which 78 are in programs administered by the Department of Revenue. No big surprise that a large number would be in revenue. We are, after all, the tax agency, and a lot of these are in some ways a provision of one or another tax. Many departments participated in the report. Our economic research staff coordinated the compiling and drafting effort for the economic research report. So for each line item, for each of these indirect expenditures, there's specific information, and these are great reports. If the members of the committee haven't seen it, I'd recommend it. It's a little bit of a reference book on little ways that the state of Alaska reduces revenue by offering certain benefits to different industries. The name of the description, the statutory authority, when it's planning to go away, the intent, public purpose, the estimated revenue impact, cost to administer, and then the number of beneficiaries and who those beneficiaries pretty much are composed of. So that's what we have. And then within that, this small brewery exemption came up, and we were asked here to speak specifically to that line item, the small brewery reduced tax rate. So that gets us to the underlying alcoholic beverage tax collected by the state of Alaska in that AS 43, Chapter 60. This started out right after Prohibition as a 5 cent per gallon tax on beer and wine. That tax was shortly thereafter added on distilled spirits. The basic statute has not changed dramatically in the last 80-plus years. The rate has obviously increased over time. It's a tax per gallon. This is a tax collected at the wholesale transaction. So either the person who brings it into the state and distributes it, or if the beer is brewed in the state and then sold, that becomes the taxable transaction. There was a major rate increase in 2002. That was during a previous period of fiscal crisis. There was a major tax increase in alcoholic beverages. There were several changes made, including half the money getting dedicated to alcoholic. It was a fund for people with problems and what's the word I'm looking for? Treatment and those sorts of things. But the idea was dime a drink. That was the headline of that legislation. So what that means is the distilled spirits is $12.80 per gallon. There are 128 ounces in a gallon, so that's 10 cents per ounce of liquor. Distilled spirits are defined as something with a 21% alcohol content or higher. Wine is $2.50 a gallon, or 10 cents per 5-ounce glass. Beer and cider, $1.07. And an answer to a question asked of Director Sione Haywood a little while ago, hard cider is calculated within the beer tax framework. It's $1.07 per gallon or 10 cents per 12-ounce bottle. The previous tax prior to 2002 on beer was 35 cents per gallon. So it was pretty much a tripling of the tax at that point in time. And in doing so, one of the workarounds or one of the provisions that was added was a new separate rate for breweries meeting a particular federal definition. That's a reference to the 26 United States Code, which is a federal small brewery tax exemption. That definition is 2 million barrels a year produced in the United States. That is a relatively large number. That's larger than anything that happens in Alaska, and frankly, only a handful of domestic breweries, you're talking your Anheuser-Busch, your Miller-type breweries, are larger than that number. Those breweries' output does represent a substantial majority of the actual beer that's sold, but everyone else falls under that definition. But it also imported beer, whether from a large or a small brewery, by definition, does not meet this federal restriction. So to qualify for the small brewery exemption in Alaska, it has to be domestic, not Alaskan, but American domestic, and producing less than 2 million barrels per year in this country. So the exception to that $1.07 tax is in 4360.010C. And what it says is the first 60,000 barrels per year sold in Alaska are taxed at that 35-cent rate, which is the old pre-2002 tax rate. Representative Wool had this right. There are 31 gallons per barrel, or two half kegs. So a single brewery could, at least in theory, benefit for up to 1.86 million gallons. That's simply 60,000 times 31, or $1.34 million. 72 cents is the value of the offset, the difference between $1.07 and 35 cents. In reality, nearly all of the breweries in the state are much smaller than that, 38 of 39, as Director Stephen Haywood said, are microbreweries producing well less than 15,000 barrels a year, some quite a bit lower than that. And the one larger brewery sells a substantial portion of their output out of state, which would be taxed in that state, not in the state of Alaska. Important to know, roughly, and it varies from year to year, but about a quarter, maybe 30% of the beer sold in Alaska qualifies for the reduced tax rate, and the other 70 to 75% are being taxed at the full $1.07 per gallon for beer. So only beer sold in Alaska, that means the beer that's brewed here and sold someplace else is not subject to Alaska's excise tax. However, beer brewed in other states and brought in is subject to our excise tax. It's a tax on beer that is distributed, sold, and eventually consumed in Alaska. And our taxpayers, for the most part, are not breweries that you would have heard of. They're beverage distributors. They're the wholesalers, and they typically will handle the product of multiple companies. Some distributors will handle both Alaska-originating beer and out-of-state-originating and foreign beer, and they'll be selling a large portion of it, and then they'll be paying us a tax based on a mix of product. Because of that, it makes it hard. It's a pretty heavy lift to precisely determine the volume of the in-state versus out-of-state brewed beer under the tax. We did go through some gyrations to pull out the numbers that are embedded a little bit later in the presentation. But it was surprisingly difficult to come up with accurate information. In general, we're finding 35 to 40% of the reduced price beer is brewed in Alaska. The other 60% or so is brewed in other states.
We got a question from Representative Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to slow you down for 1 second, Ken, because there's a lot of information. You probably said it, but. Beer produced outside of Alaska in a brewery under 60,000 barrels falls under the beer discount. Is that correct? Or does it have to be produced in Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, although there was, I believe, initial discussion to try to limit the benefit to beer brewed in Alaska, there were Commerce Clause constitutional issues with that. We can favor American beer, but we can't favor Alaskan beer. So it's beer brewed anywhere in America, and it comes from a brewery that produces less than 2 million barrels per year, which is quite large. But the brewery's national production is less than 2 million. The first 60,000 sold in Alaska are eligible for the reduced rate. If for some reason a smaller brewery from another state sells more than 60,000 barrels in Alaska, who are some of the bigger names, like Sierra Nevada or Sam Adams, someone like that, if they're selling above that line, the number in excess of 60,000 would revert up to the higher tax rate.
Yeah. Excuse me. That makes perfectly good sense. I just I spoke to one of the distributors the other day, and it sounded like their understanding was if the brewery produces over 60,000 barrels at their brewery, then they don't qualify for the discounted tax. So you probably know slightly more about it, but that's just a discrepancy that I heard. So you're saying first 60,000 sold in Alaska is it qualifies for the exemption. 60,001 goes up to the $1.07 tax rate per barrel.
Through the chair, it's the first 60,000 barrels sold by the company. So what you're saying
in
is
Alaska.
Correct in Alaska, but to qualify in the first place, the overall company has to be below 2 million barrels brewed in the United States.
Okay. I guess I have a follow-up. How do you test for the 2 million? Is that a relatively easy process, or how do we audit for the 2 million barrels per year?
Mr. Chairman, it's a federal definition, so I know there's some sort of certification. It's possible that Deputy Director Brandon Spanos might be on the line, and he might be able to answer that question with better detail than I can. It's a data set that we have access to from the taxpayers. The statute purposely tied to a federal definition that we had easy access to. I believe it's a federal small brewer's license or permit that they get that they show us as part of the tax licensing process. But we can get you additional information on that.
Thank you. And we have a question from Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Alper. So we're benefiting, because we have to be consistent under the Commerce Clause, more or less, we're benefiting relatively small producers, although they could be fairly sizable, to the tune of the first 60,000 barrels consumed in Alaska. And my question is, do they reciprocate? Do we sell out of state, and do we get some benefit so that we're producing more and selling in Seattle, that sort of thing?
So through the chair to Representative Josephson, an Alaska brewer selling their beer in Washington State is subject to whatever Washington State's excise tax on imported beer on beer is. I don't know if other states have a similar differential tax rate for small breweries. That's something that I don't have at my fingertips, and we could also find that out. But if they do, we would most certainly qualify. Again, there's constitutional limitations.
Okay. Continue. Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To determine if a larger brewery, say Sierra Nevada, for example, sells 60,000 barrels in Alaska, that's up to the distributor to track that. And then once they hit their 60,001, then they reach into that less the non-discounted rate. So that's something they have to keep a running tally of during the year.
Through the chair, Representative, well, that's correct. And as you know, each beer only has a single distributor in Alaska. So it's not like there's the problem where 40,000 is sold by one company and 30,000 by another company, and whose 10,000 ends up paying the higher tax. It's all through the same distributor. So these problems are resolvable.
And follow up.
So the discount benefits basically all the beer coming into Alaska up to the 60,000 barrel, and my understanding is that Alaskan brewing is the only one that even hits that threshold, the only brewery in the state that makes 60,000 barrels a year, and I heard the rest aren't even close. Maybe one might be getting close. But it also benefits like Sierra Nevada and New Belgium, assuming 60,000 barrels is a fair amount of beer, so all their beer coming in also gets this discount. So it's not a particular advantage for Alaskan beers.
So through the chair, Representative, well, again, that 60,000 barrels, nearly 2 million gallons, there's more than 10 beers in a gallon. So we're talking 18 million beers from a single brewery. There's only 700,000 Alaskans, and a substantial percentage don't drink beer. So, yeah, it would be hard to reach that number for a single brewery. Alaskan brewery, I believe, brews more than 60,000 barrels per year, although I'm not certain of it, but they export a substantial portion of it to other states. I'm pretty certain what they sell in Alaska is also well below the 60,000 threshold. That's never been a limiting factor, to my knowledge, the 60,000 number.
Mr. Alper, we do have Mr. Spanos online now.
I don't know if Mr. Spanos heard the question, but it had to do, Mr. Chairman, it was your question. Maybe, if you don't mind, would you please repeat it? It had to do with licensing and how we know that someone meets the federal qualification.
I guess I was just, Mr. Spanos, if you could indulge me for a moment, I was trying to think of how does the state of Alaska audit or test for the 2 million barrels or 2 million gallons, or do we?
So, Mr. Chair, the way that that we ensure that they meet that is that we require them, in order to qualify for the reduced rate, they have to first apply with us for that reduced rate. And when they apply, they have to supply the federal form so the feds certify that they meet that requirement. And then we allow them to have the reduced rate.
Okay, thank you. And then I do believe Representative Wohl had a question about that going from the 60,000 to the 60,000 and first, and is that the responsibility of the distributor to make the tax division aware and then the rate shifts?
So if I understood the question, Mr. Chair, is it the responsibility of the taxpayer to start paying at the higher rate, or do we tell them? Is that the question?
Correct.
So we do keep track of that on the tax form, and we would assess them at the higher rate if they don't keep track of that themselves. So it could be either way.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Spanos? Not at the moment. Thank you, Mr. Spanos. And if you could remain online, I think we might have some more questions for you as we go. Mr. Alper, you can continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been going back and forth, but I'm on slide 10 right now. And again, 25% to 30% of the beer sold in Alaska qualifies for this reduced tax rate, which speaks to, among other things, there has been a blossoming and explosion of small breweries, both locally and nationally. The great bulk of the beer consumed in America is still from the major brewers that are well above that 2 million barrel threshold. Our taxpayers are typically these distributors. I said that makes it hard to sometimes parse out if they're selling both Midnight Sun and Sierra Nevada, say, what's what, but we managed to collect a complete data set just by digging deeper into their records. It's not automatically in the tax data, but it's in the supporting documentation that these companies have provided. Because some of the Alaskan breweries do distribute their own product, I know members of this committee have been or are in the beverage industry, some of the breweries deliver their own truckloads, that makes them a direct taxpayer. If they're distributing it themselves, they would be paying us taxes directly on the volumes that they're shipping to local bars, as well as the amount that they're selling on-premise through their own brew pubs. In that circumstance, they become taxpayers based on those volumes. But if other volumes of theirs are run through a distributor, the distributor is paying the taxes on that portion of it. Slide 12 is my last material slide, and it puts some numbers to this. And you can see here, as you look backwards for 5 years, there is a steadily growing number of breweries that are receiving this benefit from 19 in 2012 to 31 in 2016, an increase in the number of reduced rate gallons. We're now at a little bit over 4 million reduced rate gallons. Again, a single company at the 60,000 barrel threshold would be 1.8, so something less than 150,000 barrels statewide fall under the reduced tax rate if you're comparing gallons to barrels. And the tax impact of that, again, at the 72-cent benefit, is slightly over $3 million. So if in the context of the indirect expenditure report, this is a $3 million indirect expenditure, a reduction in revenue that we give by choice because of this benefit. And then the benefit accruing to Alaskan companies versus out-of-state companies varies a little bit from year to year, but the in-state share typically is 35 to 40% of the total. Last year, a little bit over $1.3 million to in-state breweries and a little less than $1.7 million to out-of-state breweries. And again, that number has steadily been growing. If you look, the increase in the number of breweries is more than 50%. The total volume is up by only maybe 15 or 20%. So you're seeing more smaller breweries and therefore a smaller average production per brewery as this industry is reaching its next step. I know there's a couple of small breweries opening up in Juneau this year. And that was my last slide, just some nuts and bolts and facts and figures on the tax. I'm happy to take any more questions.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions for Director Alper, Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Director Alper, is there an expiration on the discounted rate, or is it just fixed?
Through the chair, there is not a discounted rate, Representative Josephson. It is simply an alternative tax calculation in statute.
Thank you. Representative Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the out-of-state versus the in-state brewery benefit, it's more benefits out-of-state breweries because of this 60,000-barrel threshold in-state sales. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, there's simply more of them. Like, there's a lot of beer brewed by small breweries that gets brought into the state of Alaska. So it more than equals the amount of brew that's brewed in Alaska and sold here. I mean, hopefully over time, we're taking a larger percentage of our own market share, but As you know, you named some of the names yourself, Fat Tire and Deschutes, and these are good-sized companies. They sell a lot of beer here, and it adds up to more than what's produced and sold here.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, two things. One, a lot of these smaller breweries nationally are getting bought up by the InBevs and the Miller SAB or whatever they're called now. There's basically two beer companies in the world. So the Deschutes and the Elysians and the Laconas, and they're all getting bought up. So I think they will not be – they will be above the two million barrel threshold, many of them, because they're owned by Anheuser-Busch or InBev.
Through the chair, Representative Wolt, I believe you're correct, and that would be something in our statute that favors those who choose to remain independent. Mr. Spanos might be able to answer that more definitively.
And Mr. Spanos, if you could, and I think maybe a clarification on the question. I think the question is, if a smaller microbrewery is purchased by a larger brewery, does that mean their overall, do they absorb that 2 million threshold of the parent company, or is there a provision where they still remain a small brewery for federal purposes?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I know the answer off the top of my head. I suspect that it would be viewed as a unitary group and that they would lose that designation, but I'd have to follow up with some of our experts here.
Okay, thank you. And a follow-up from Representative Wolf.
Thank you. I thought he was the expert. let's see. So this discount started in 2001 or 2002. What was the impetus? What was the reason to give a discounted brewing for which most of the benefits outside out-of-state breweries?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, at that point, the legislature was tripling the tax on beer, and the small breweries that were both existing and starting up, I'm sure, raised a little bit of a complaint and said this is going to drive us out of business and hurt our competitiveness. And this was created as something of a workaround to maintain competitiveness for small businesses. If I remember it, and I wasn't working here at the time, but I remember it as a news story, the original intent was to try to carve out the beer brewed in-state, but we bumped up against the constitutional provision and had to expand it.
Okay. Well, I guess last statement more than a question, but it seems, again, based on statistics, that the 2002 discount, I mean, the tasting room law, where someone is able to make beer in the back room and then sell it in the front at a retail price instead of a wholesale price, seems to me the biggest impetus for the blossoming of Alaskan breweries. And as witnessed in Juneau, there's a few opening up, I think, in the week, last week or next week, and they're not doing much wholesale business. They're mostly on-premise consumption, much like a beverage dispensary license or a brew pub that also sells food and stuff like that. That's my understanding, or my interpretation, I guess.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, I know it's not unusual for a startup brewery brew pub to not have a bottling line at all. They might have they'll be concentrated on on-site consumption, and then perhaps start distributing some kegs to local restaurants, but sometimes the bottling line doesn't get added till several years later.
Thanks. Here, Representative Justison.
Through the chair. Mr. Alper, at the time when we were here, say 13, 14 months ago, when we were looking at, my memory is, doubling the alcohol excise tax, and we were looking at increasing trade taxes sort of across the board, I remember my greatest reluctance was actually an alcohol tax because we already had the highest rate, and I thought that the industry made a pretty good argument about that, notwithstanding the harm that alcohol causes. But my question in that context is part of the reason it doubled because we were going to do away with this in-state brewery benefit? Was that a sizable part of the doubling, or how did that work?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the governor's alcohol tax bill from 2016 was a doubling of all of the rates, so I brought back slide 8 here. The distilled spirits was going to increase to $25.60, wine to $5, and beer to $2.14, so 20 cents per portion, so to speak. That bill contained an increase in the small brewery exempted tax from 35 cents to 70 cents, so it was also doubling it. But it actually increased the delta, as you were, between the full tax and the small brewery tax.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great report. Thank you. Is there an ask associated with this? You know, I understand we come forward with a report, but are there any suggestions or revisions proposed or
through the chair, Representative Birch? The administration does not currently have any statutory asks on the alcoholic beverage tax. The governor did not reintroduce his bill. We are here by request because the committee wanted to look at the impact of this specific exemption, and with possibly looking at modifying it, but I'm not aware, and I don't have recommendations for what those modifications would be.
Representative Birch, that is the case where actually we're asked to look deeper into the situation or issue by the Finance Subcommittee Chair of the Department of Commerce budget as an issue, and so as the Labor and Commerce Committee, it's up to us to review this information, digest it, and decide whether or not there are opportunities for maintaining the economy in the state of Alaska, but possibly increasing revenue. We can have a further discussion about that in the future. We collect the information, and then updated information from Mr. Alper says basically that we've got $3 million of impact based on the reduced rate, and so we have options from completely eliminating the reduction, which would save or generate $3 million of revenue, to somewhere in between or not touching it at all. And so that's where we're at as a committee.
Great. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, one additional follow-up to Representative Josephson's question from a while ago. Our alcoholic beverage taxes are among the highest in the country. That came out during the testimony on the bill last year. The $1.07 is very much on the high end of beer taxes. The 35-cent reduced rate is kind of middle of the pack as far as beer taxes in other states.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Alper. And that was actually helped me a lot to understand the circumstance and the situation. We don't have any intent on doing anything more with this year, but there may be opportunities for us to continue this discussion during the next session and see if there are opportunities for us to maybe make some modifications or maybe not, and that'll be a discussion we'll have with the committee as we, perhaps even over the interim, but as we come into next year's legislative session.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm glad I could be helpful.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Alper. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And I will say that we don't really know where our legislative session is going to be or go. And we're in a little bit of limbo as far as whether or when we close out Labor and Commerce Committee. So we are still going to be active with less items to deal with. But as a celebration of our session together as a committee, we have received from my staff, Crystal Kieneman, a box of cupcakes that are available for everyone who's in the room to partake, and it's our celebration and acknowledgement of the 2017 legislative session together as Labor and Commerce. So thank you, everyone, for being part of the committee. Representative Stutes.
I'd just like to add those cupcakes are delightful. They're carrot cupcakes with a yummy, yummy frosting. Thank you, Crystal.
I'll just say go help the economy and have a beer, right?
I was going to say they might pair well with an amber or something. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for being here. And with that, at 4:12, House, when we will have a couple of meetings next week, but they are going to be fairly short meetings. And so with that, at 4:12, House Labor and Commerce Committee will stand adjourned. Thank you.